for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting, brought to you by ElkGrows.com, with your host and elk hunting coach, Joe Gillick. You want to hunt elk? They live to hunt elk. Their goal is to share with you what they have learned grinding it out for over 35 seasons, doing what they love. So come on into camp and set a spell. Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunters.
When it comes to elk hunting, it's a constant learning process. And as hunters, most of those lessons come in hindsight. Our understanding basically comes after a blown situation or scenario. So y'all, the goal of this show is to break down everyday elk hunter scenarios, hunters just like yourself, and hopefully help them in their process while helping you. Let's turn that hindsight into foresight. Welcome y'all to our Elk Bro Scenario Revamp Session. And on today's show, you know, I just was introduced to Sam through email, sent me a scenario, and actually, Sam, you're the person that basically inspired this new type of show. So you're the first. Welcome. How do you feel about it?
Yeah. A little outside my comfort zone, but, I'm glad I learn so much from these podcasts. So, I'm glad to maybe, contribute and help others, learn from my mistakes.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool because I replied back to your email after I read it. And, you know, it's funny. We get a bunch of long scenario emails, right? And with the makeup of our other show, if we were to just go into the scenario, it would basically be a show in itself. And so when I was looking at that, I was like, man, it would basically be a show in itself. So why not do just that? Let's make this into a show. Let's make this into a segment. Let's get other people to send in their scenarios because it's right. You know, you're right. And in that the best way for all of us to learn is one of two ways. Either we make the mistake ourselves over and over and over and over until we figure it out, or we learn from somebody else's experiences, right?
Yep.
So absolutely. I emailed you back and I was like, well, how do you feel about, right?
Yep. Yep. And I'm a question asker as kind of my default thing. I like to ask a lot of questions. And, I think it's just, like you said, you know, you learn from those mistakes, but like, you know, most of us, we live in the Midwest. I get 7 to 10 days a year of elk hunting. So the number of experiences I can have is limited. And, so anything we can pick up from each other is going to be really valuable before we mess it up the next time.
Yeah. And that, you made a great point because I try to tell people that all the time is if you think about it, if you hunt 7 days a year, right? If you hunt 7 days a year, basically it takes you 5 years to get a month's worth of education out there, right? So that's where this, what we do, our podcast and all the stuff that's available, these resources are just so huge for people these days because you can really flatten that learning curve or you can go do it on your own. So tell us a little, you said you do 7 days a year. Tell us about your current elk hunting experience and some of the things that you guys have done.
So this 2023 is going to be season three for my group. There's three or four of us that kind of just deer hunt together and stuff. And then kind of one on a whim, I just messaged one of them. I was like, hey, you want to go to Colorado next year at elk hunt? And there's the guy that's kind of down for anything. He's like, yeah, let's do it. So I'm the planner and the researcher of the group. And so I pick the units. I do most of the e-scouting, all that stuff. And, so we ended up first year, it was 2020, in Colorado, over the counter. We were there for about, again, 9 or 10 days, found elk almost every day. Very, very challenging. It's like everywhere you pull up, there's a car kind of thing that you're dealing with, but we found elk almost every day. On the very last day, I drew back on a cow, and I made a range estimation mistake with the elevation change. Yeah. And shot right over her back. I guess the straight line ranged correctly, but
didn't downhill?
It was uphill.
It was uphill.
Looking uphill, yeah. So wow. Uphill and downhill are the same. But forgot the physics there, and shot right straight as a straight perfect alignment right over her back. And then 2021 we didn't hunt. I just had a new baby, so I had to sit that one out. Then last year we ended up in Colorado again in a low point draw unit, and actually I didn't even have a tag. The two of us had tags, and I'm also the best caller in the group, and honestly kind of prefer in some ways to do the calling. You kind of get that interaction more than just with the bow. But and we did again another 9 or 10 day hunt in elk almost every day. One of the guys in our group did get a cow last year, and had several close encounters. We'll talk about one here in a little bit, but because I feel like I'm only 2 years in. I do tons of research, so I feel like I know more than 2 years, but it's still like those last 50 yards or whatever, that those are the experiences that are just hard to gain, because you only get a handful of those on a trip if you're lucky, or if you're, you know. And so that's what that's still where my probably gap is. We can find elk pretty much every day. It's getting within 50 yards is that's where we're still learning.
So let me ask you this. You say we can find elk every day. What has been your method of finding elk every day?
That's a good question. I e-scout a ton. I do a ton of research. We're not necessarily the group that goes out there and walks 20 miles a day. We've done the 10, 12 miles, 4,000 feet of elevation gain and stuff. We've done that. But I am really in the camp of, I can pretty much find them within a mile of the road pretty regularly. And it's hard to describe, but I've in my mind can picture those spots that get overlooked pretty well.
Right.
For just a variety of different weird things. I've somewhat cracked the code as far as avoiding those spots that everyone else either drives by, or they stop driving because they saw some shiny thing before they got to where I was going.
Right.
So I wish if I could tell you, I probably would start my own podcast, if I could articulate it, but.
Well, you've actually described some of the things that we're always telling people, man, all the time. And that, you know, everybody's like, you know, from the trailhead, from the trailhead, from the trailhead. And we hardly ever go to a trailhead.
Yeah,
we
never,
most
ever.
Elk are, they're passed on the way to the trailhead.
Yeah.
Because, and then the other thing is there's also a spot if you do go to the trailhead, you know, and most people, when they get there, they're going to hike in 3, 4, 5 miles. And it's generally within that first mile or 2 miles of that trailhead on finding side shoots.
Yep.
You're going to probably locate those elk. So you've done a great job of doing your research. You know that you can get into elk. Now, let me ask you this, because you guys have gone 20, 21, and 22. Oh, you were. You
2020, 2022. Yeah, we sat out 2021, yeah.
Right. So what time of year are you hunting?
Yeah, we're hunting pretty much both years. And again, this year we're going to New Mexico, but for second archery. So we're pretty much like September 15th through, you know, 25th, 26th, pretty much every time.
Okay. So how have those elk, when you go back to 2020, if you're hunting that second or that 15th is dynamite, man. So that's actually a good time. The only thing is I think in Colorado, you guys were
the muzzleloaders.
Muzzleloaders, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that adds an element.
Yeah. It's, it's tough in Colorado in those units. It's there, you know, my observations are, is that the herd sizes are usually pretty small. There's rarely more than one bull.
Right.
And so you're calling to a herd bull a lot. And as you guys know, when you're calling to a herd bull, he's probably getting his cows the heck out of there. He doesn't want to deal with another bull.
Right.
And so I'm big on the cow sounds and everything, but it's, again, even with cow sounds, sometimes you're not drawing, you don't have a satellite you can draw in, right?
Right.
Sometimes you can get the cows to come in, but they're not, I've found times where like, man, they're super vocal, and then other times they're shut down. So as an example, the second bugle or second cow call I let out, the first day ever elk hunting, I bugled in another group, then went over the mountains. Like, I'm not bugling anymore. I just calling in other hunters, did some cow calls, and we had, I had two bulls, from two different finger ridges, just went insane. They were pissed off, and I was in the middle of them, and they started coming in. Both coming in, we kind of lost track of the other one, and then ended up 20 yards from the other one through some super thick brush, and neither of us could get around to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up bumping them trying to hook around. And then I've been times where I think I described in the email I sent you where we were glassing this large herd, probably about a mile away. And, we hear someone else, another bull bugle off to the east of them. And this real mature herd bull darts towards that sound of that bugle, rips off his own bugle, and then turns around and pushes his whole herd off the field into the forest. And it's like, so I've seen a little bit of both. But generally speaking, I'd say they've been on the quiet side. I've gotten some screaming matches with bulls and stuff, but for the most part, they're pretty quiet in those higher pressure units. Well, yeah. New Mexico will maybe be a new experience. We'll see.
Yeah. Especially around the 15th, and it's going to be different. You don't have to deal with like the whole muzzleloader issue.
Yep.
You know, I'm used to hunting silent elk, and some of the things that you described are some of the issues that a lot of people have to deal with. I was curious, when you had the two bulls that were screaming at each other, did you learn anything from that, the way they were communicating?
I don't – so the second one who was moving real fast, he only went off about two or three times, and we kind of lost whatever happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
I think the main thing we learned out of that situation is that, because we ended up, as we were trying to go to them, we ended up finding their wallow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in hindsight, we should just backed up when the calls went cold, we should just backed up and gone sat 20 yards above that wallow uphill and just been patient and maybe started calling later, but also just see if they were coming to take a midday drink. But,
I think you had other possibilities there too as well. And what I mean by that is that I'm not real huge, and I just had a email from somebody else about hunting New Mexico and finding a wallow and just sitting on the wallow. And that's not something, first of all, my personality doesn't let me do it.
Yeah, that's why I elk hunt. I mean, I like deer hunting too, but I like elk hunting more because I'm moving around. So I'd only do that in those limited situations where like I know they're right there.
Right.
But otherwise, I'd get bored. I didn't drive 2,000 miles. I can sit in a tree stand if I want to hunt stationary.
So the thing I was going to tell you is in that situation, and you don't necessarily call to them. So when you had two bulls that were communicating with each other like that, you had elk doing elk things. There were some things mm-hmm. that, and the way they were communicating that attracted them. Now those happened to be engaged with each other, right?
Yeah.
They were actually communicating. If you've listened to some of the things that we do, you've probably heard about our scenario calling that we
mm-hmm.
do.
Yep.
So yeah. Really what I would have done in a situation that I knew elk were in, especially if it was, you know, what time of day was that you were dealing with?
That was like mid morning, I think. That was back in 2020. So it's a little not fresh memory, but I'm pretty sure it's like we hiked up that, you know, it was about a mile and a half, pretty steep climb in. So it's probably like 9 to 10.
Yeah.
Time we were in there.
So basically the bull's going to bed, right? You know,
yeah.
And if he had cows, when the cows are going to bed. Now the issue with that, if he does have cows, and I've seen the same thing that you're talking about in Colorado that amazed me, is that you're going to see single, small, young bulls with one cow, two cows running that cow everywhere. You don't see the big groups or I didn't in the area.
Yeah, he had three, it turns out, three or four that we, that we saw.
Yeah. And it's like that. You don't see a real true herd bull with 20, 30 cows.
Yeah.
Now I know that there are places that happen in Colorado and it might be a certain time of year once they, you know, they gather them up like that. But, you know, I was amazed at how many I saw immature bulls with cows and wanting to keep that one cow or two cows or three cows that they have with them. Right. So, I saw that a lot, but, so in that situation, where I knew midday that those animals were in that area, I would have probably in that wallow, like you said, gone off a little bit. And then I could have done some scenarios where I'm actually not calling to a bull, but I'm acting out other elk doing elk things in that area to attract them over.
Yeah. Yeah. Like your cow parties or breeding sequences and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can do something like that or, yeah, like you said, a breeding sequence or anything like that. Even do some splashing in the water sometimes because of some of those other additional sounds that kind of pull them in. So, yeah, that is an option in that situation. But you had a particular scenario that happened to you in 2022. So let's pull that scenario in, talk about it, and see what we can do with that.
So I'll try to – I had like long version, short version, but and so essentially, and as we mentioned, the generally quiet elk, that was the time where we had that herd bull that kind of, you know, at the first sign of a bugle ran all his cows off the mountain. And so we were hunting there for about 3 or 4 days, against finding elk, but they're usually, well, small groups isolated, not really responding to cows. We were more just kind of bumping into them while they were in transition going somewhere else.
Right.
And, so on day 5, we're driving back to camp at night and like, I wouldn't say like we nearly hit, but like pretty close to the truck where this little young 5x5 runs on the road on our way back to camp. And we just kind of, you just kind of tell how they were, how it was vibing. Like it was just there to feed. Like it wasn't moving anywhere. And so there was fields on both sides of this road. One was private, one was public. And so we ran to the public and we're like, well, let's go in the morning and see if he's still in there munching around, or at very least we can see what kind of sign is in there. And so we go back there in the morning in the first light. And my buddy walks up, who's got the tag, walks up 30 yards from the truck and bumps him. He's like, he was right there. There's only one place you could park there to access the public land. And he was just, Right up there. Like, it's another lesson.
Is this a dirt road, paved road, highway? What is it?
It's a dirt road, but it's not far. I mean, it was not far from a paved, I mean, it was a paved road and then it switches to dirt. So it was a well-traveled road.
Because I want everybody to hear this, you know, you got a well-traveled road. You guys drove on it, parked in there, did all of that, and still was able to bump a bull that was how far up into the trees?
Yeah, we bumped him. My friend was 30 yards from the truck and the bull was probably 70 yards from him. So if he's straight line to a road, it was probably less than 100 yards.
Which is a huge, huge lesson, man.
Yeah.
Right there.
We also killed a cow in that same area, 100 yards from the road in a slightly different direction. So there, you don't have to go far. We got pretty good at being lazy.
I would say smart. You were hunting smart, not hunting hard.
Yeah.
So that's how I would put that.
I agree. So we go back there, after we bumped him, we kind of just quietly looked in the area a little bit just for other sign and found a lot, both fresh and old. So it was pretty clear that they were using this field pretty often. I say field, it was, you know, my Midwestern version, I call it like a sagebrush field, probably like junipers and whatever.
Right.
And so we go back, we're like, they're being quiet. Let's see if we can ambush them, you know? So we go back and we sit up basically up kind of, this is a sloping field and we go up and there's several draws in this field. It's probably about a mile wide. And we based on the sign assess that we want to go sit on this one ridge forming a draw that has two draws on each side. And, we set up in there just inside the tree line, found some good cover. And, sure enough, that evening, a herd comes down. This bull isn't even in this group. We never saw him again. Don't know what happened to him. But this herd comes down with a spike, I think about 10 cows, and then a 5x6. So I'm pretty sure it was a 6x6 with a broken tine. But a real nice bull. and but they were 175 or something yards away. We were losing light, so we just watched them. Just let's see what they're gonna do.
Right.
It's actually kind of a cool observation. The they were moving to this lower field, and the bull sat on this little hill and just was just scanning around while all his cows went to the field. And once the last one left the field, he left. It was kind of a cool little never seen that before. And so the next day we hunted somewhere else. We didn't want to hunt there in the morning because the thermals were very stable at night. It's this long valley. So another lesson that I didn't, for other hunters that I didn't, never thought of this before. So we always think about thermals just in the context of the mountain or the hillside you're on.
Right.
But we were also at the bottom of probably like a 10, 15 mile long valley with a stream running through it. And, almost at the very bottom. And so those thermals were just ripping down that valley in the evening, before they were coming down the hill, the traditional way to think about it, they were coming from way up that valley and pulling down. So very, very stable in the evenings. The mornings was a little more chaotic because the opposite's happening, but they're going two different directions. So we hunted somewhere else during the morning, went back in the evening with both of our shooters. We had two tags in the group and set up right where they kind of spread out, right where they came down. But of course they came through a different draw. That evening. And so we play this little game, for two or three nights. And then, on the last night, we're like, it wasn't our last night hunting, but it was like, we're going to try this one more time and then we're going to go somewhere else because this isn't working out. So they come down. I'm set up just to paint the picture a little bit. Since they're not responding to calls, like I'm just kind of there to watch, for the most part, but this last night I set up about 100 yards away from my friend, kind of level on the hill, downwind, with the idea that I can either maybe spot him coming in, you know, spread out a little bit. If I hear him coming behind me, I can signal him, have him come run to me. Or if they're on the other side of him, just out of bow range, I might be able to pull him in just a little bit with a calf call or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they end up coming. So if I'm here, my friends to the east, they come out east of him another 100 or so yards, and so he takes off after them. I take off after him to catch up. I had kind of a bum foot, which I can tell that story later. And the time I get to him, I hear some cows running all over the place up on the mountain, some elk running all over the mountain, other cows at the time running all over the place making noise in the mountain. So he bumped a couple of them trying to get into position to cut, trying to cut him off. We heard the bull bugle and some rocks moving up the mountain. So what he didn't anticipate was that the bull wasn't in the front, right? So like, you know, he had cows some measure of distance in front of him. And so that's another lesson there. And so he bumps them, but he only bumps a couple of them and the rest of the herd doesn't know what's going on. And so, I think they hear the commotion a little bit.
I'm going to interrupt you just for a second but you covered something there that we want to make sure the people hear and listen to is because everybody thinks that the bull is really dominating the situation and he's not.
Yeah, it's a weak cow. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he's basically following suit. Now, sometimes he'll go off, he'll go ahead if there's a reason to do it, like a challenger or something else has attention. But then he always turns and ends up in the vapor trail of those cows, basically. They're determining where they're going. So that's a good point to remember. And that's why I tell people too. Let's say that it's the morning and you're following a herd, right? Because maybe the bull is making some sounds. You don't want to try to follow that herd from the rear end because what's happening is, again, that bull's following the cows and he may stop and he may be communicating, and we can talk about what he's communicating at another time, but he's bugling. So what do? You lock up and you figure, oh, maybe he's going to come into me. Well, his cows are still walking off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, you know, you're sitting in one position and then next thing you know, the bull's bugling from another 400 yards away because now he's catching up to the cows. And so what I tell people is this is that, you know, I never want to trail a herd because I end up getting way behind them. I always want to get up on the side, try to parallel and actually get ahead of that bull where he's at. Because now I know that, you know, if I know he has cows, I know that I am perpendicular to that, to that bull, most likely I'm paralleling them. And as they start to go up, we know things get smaller at the top and we can actually have some things happen there. Or I get to find out where they bet. Now in your case, it was just the opposite. You're hearing a bull that's coming down into the park and your buddy's assuming, okay, I'm setting up for the bull without the knowledge factor that the cows are coming in first and he's trailing now, right? Yeah. So, and bumps him. All right. So go ahead. I'm sorry, man.
No, that's a good point. We should have known that just based on how we observed him the night before, a couple nights before too. So just one of those, again, lessons. We won't make that mistake again, hopefully.
Yeah.
Anyway, we split the herd. We ended up splitting the herd up a little bit and, the bull actually and the rest of the herd kind of comes out basically like right above where I had this really good spot with some rocks and sagebrush. I could have sat there and if they didn't smell me, they would never known I was there, but he came
what
up.
What elevation are you guys at?
I think I want to say this was around somewhere between 8,500 and 9,000 feet.
So almost in that country, almost not far from road level, right?
I mean, we were there. So there was a road there. There was a highway probably only a couple hundred feet in elevation below that. So it's not high. We were up different days. We were up there at 10,500, 11,000 feet, but
this
we found
the low country of the area.
Yeah, correct. If we kept driving a little bit, we ended up some BLM. We're basically, it kind of had that BLM vibe to it. There was forest up above, but yeah, definitely this is the bottom of the valley. Yeah.
Cool. And I wanted to make that, we're hearing so many things. And if we were to paraphrase a couple of things, it's like, you don't have to go to the trailhead. There's a lot of elk that are being passed. You guys are finding elk every day. You're in the low country, lower elevation, not far from roads, a lot of that is great information for people to hear. All right.
Yep. Yeah. Rocky. And we found elk every trip, but literally between 8,500 and 11,000 feet on the same day. Like, don't listen to all that above tree line. Yeah, they are, but some other ones aren't. I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Not that that's helpful for anyone, but just don't fixate on like someone saw them above 11,000 feet because that's not the only place they're at.
Well, the thing that I like about that though is it seems like when you get above timberline or right up in there, generally when you blow animals out because of the openness of some of those areas and the patchiness of it, when they go, right?
Yeah.
They're like in another drainage.
Mm-hmm.
You guys almost described like when you bump that 5x5 crossing the road, you found him pretty much 100 yards from where you saw him the next morning.
Yeah.
Generally in those thick places like that, they don't have the same need to empty out of the country. They have found a place that they feel safe. They found a place that they get food, they get water, and they don't have to blow out of there. They could end up being over a ridge or something like that, but it's a whole different type of hunt, really.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
That cow I missed in 2020, we were on her for three, on her and her little herd for three different days, and we had interactions with them for three different days within an area that has less than 200 acres.
Excellent point, man, right there. That's awesome.
The bull's coming down and his herd's coming down to where I just was, and he's pissed. Like, he's like, where did my cows go? He's raking. He's screaming off bugles. We're about 175, 200 yards away. Not much cover between us though. So we're kind of in a tough spot. And so there's all these little, it's not a flat field. There's a lot of like these draws and like little ridges and berms and the ridges kind of have some trees on them. And so I'm on the other side of him. My shooter's right up on the edge, and I'm on the other kind of back behind him. And we're losing light now. I forgot that detail is that this has all happened in the last, they came down within like 2 minutes every day, like of the same time every day, but different locations. But we had maybe 15 to 20 minutes of maybe 15 to 30 minutes of light every day to do this. And so I do some, you know, Paul Medell calls them the contact buzzes, that kind of screechy.
Kind of
sounds like a deer barking at you in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, kind of like, get your butt over here. We're lost. We're separated. And he's screaming back at me and raking. And, we were real shy. You know, we can get into the what ifs in a second here, but basically, we're losing light. I was like, even if he comes, we're going to run out of time. Like, he's not going to close this gap in time.
Right.
So,
right.
This is going on for a few minutes. And I was like, talking to him, she was like, just run at him. Like, it's pretty dark. He had really good, his camouflage, just observing him a couple nights before, blended in with us like really well. Even like I could barely see him even when I knew where he was. Mm-hmm. I was like, just run at him. There's a couple trees that he could keep between him and the bowl to obscure his vision. And then I started hooked around him. I went downhill behind this berm and then behind another berm that was parallel to the bowl, and just kept making cow sounds like, he ain't coming to me. I'm leaving. I'm going to the other field. With, you know, hope one was that it would just distract him and he wouldn't see my shooter. And hope two is that maybe if he starts moving a little bit, then my shooter will get a nice broadside shot at him as well. So
I got news for you, man. That's a great strategy. It really is.
Yeah, it worked. We just ran out of time. So he didn't move. He sat right there, pissed off, raking, bugling, where are you going? You know, asking me where I'm going. And my shooter got, I think, like 60, 75 yards away from him. But it was just, he's a brown blob at that point, you know, with the light fading. And so
he had cows with him, yes?
Yeah, he had that 10 or so cows with him. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one reason he didn't come.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you're just another cow out of the ones that he has there, and there's nothing to signify that, you know, you're in estrus or anything like that. Now, possibly as you were going away, had you introduced another bull, I don't even know that would have been the case. I think the thing I would have probably gone to is, I'd have probably gone to lost calf calls at that point and forget trying to pull the bull and try to pull the cows, you know, because when he's sitting there screaming and blowing up that tree, he's demonstrating. He's demonstrating for you as you were cow calling to come to him. He's basically having you come to him, and he's demonstrating for those other cows that are there as well, kind of keeping them that he's the man. So I think in that situation, had you been leaving and going out of there or going around sounding like a lost calf and try to get that, go towards that maternal instinct, I think you would have had a better shot with that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And I consider the bull sounds, but like, I think you're right. Like, that's probably given the everything that we observed that week, we just kind of decided we weren't even going to make bull sounds anymore because it just wasn't, unless there was multiple bulls, which we never ran into.
So, but here's the thing. Okay. The day that you guys saw the bull on the ridge and the other guys called to him, then the bull rounded him up and took off, what time of day was that?
I think that was also morning. Yeah, that was also morning. Yeah, that was pretty early in the morning.
So what's happening in that situation is those elk are going to a destination.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, the difference is your evening elk were at a destination.
Yeah.
So I would have actually, especially if I'd have had trees and brush that would have obscured me, I'd have got my shooter as close as possible, and I would have started going right at that bull, and slamming stuff and sounding like a bull. I would have, because he's at his destination. Now he's going to have to put up or shut up now, right?
Yeah.
So I would have actually gone at that booger, and I would have gone with him, challenging him, displaying for his cows, raking, doing everything I can to make him have to defend.
Yeah.
So that's really what I would change. And so the point I want to make in that is I want you to always have in your head, are they going to a destination or are they at a destination? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Think about time of day. You know, so when you take that one bull that you saw, that herd bull there, and then those other guys bugle, I don't even know what the wind was like, but those cows were probably already wanting to go in a different direction. And these guys are calling from way off. So he's basically just, they're just going where they're going to go. Yeah. All right. But you were in a prime time situation. So I want to ask you this about that too, because you guys played this cat and mouse game with them for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least three.
Yeah. So were you ever on them in the morning in that area?
No. So we, so two things there. One is that the thermals in the morning there were kind of wishy-washy, not unlike they were during the daytime or the evening. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is we, based on us seeing that we had actually a different, one of these days too, I forgot to mention, we actually were driving through the area and we saw them up back up on, there's a little area of private land near here that they weren't really using much, but we actually saw them from the road up in this private land. And we had the same, the morning after we saw them in the evening. So we were kind of basically operating the assumption that they were staying in this field all night. And we didn't think we were going to be able to get and sneak up on them due to the lack of cover and the inconsistent winds. We weren't sure that we were able to get above them or around them.
Yeah. So that would be the only thing that I would have wanted to know. And in hearing you, because again, I'm just getting my perception from what you're telling me, right?
Yeah.
It could be all these different variables. But one thing that I would want to know is, you know, where are they going to? And is there a possibility of me getting to where they're going to embedding and then having that situation where I can have that midday call in, right?
We considered going up, you know, all day chasing them up this mountain, and it's something we could have done. The reason we decided not to do that was one, because this area was huge. This was so we're talking about hunting again the bottom,
right?
Bottoms here, and then there's this massive, I think I before we got this call, I kind of mapped it on Gaia, and it was like 4,500 acre area. It could have been more than that, but that's the obvious potential bedding area to me was 4,500 acres, which is like, you know, gigantic.
So the reason
tons of north facing timber too. So it's like they could have been anywhere up there. They're not responding to calls. And I'm like, you know, we're just going to bump them out of the area if we start going to try to.
And I'm not talking about necessarily going in and hunting them out. What I'm saying is to help you in your evening hunt, because part of your problem was you didn't know which draw they were going to come down.
Yeah.
Right. And if you don't want to blow them out, I totally hear you on that, because they're doing something every day. There's no other hunters in there. You don't want to hurt the situation. No, it all makes sense. But what I'm saying is you could have got a little bit more data by having been there and stayed away enough and off, you know, downwind or you know, up thermal, so that you could actually find out where they bedded for the day. Because once you find out where they bed for the day, you're going to have a whole lot better information on which draw they're going to come down to the same place, right?
Yeah.
So that actually lets you now, go in instead of waiting for them in the actual park. That allows you to wait for them in transition from where they're bedding to coming down. And they're going to do that once the thermals are already changing and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So. That's one, you know, you were asking me different strategies. One thing I would do is I would just want more information of where they went. If I don't want to blow them out, I totally get that, right? Because you're able to have that. But man, I hate chasing the sun in the evening, man. And what's nice about if you can get on them in the morning, and sometimes it's not possible, but you got to really look at the area and see, is there a place where we have at least some predominant wind that's going to help us either bend thermals or stay on their downwind side and stay away enough to actually kind of stay within, you know, either visual or auditory if they are talking when they're going. Was the bull, you know, when they were making the move coming down into the park, was he announcing it at any time?
So I think three or four nights we were there, I think we heard two bugles of, you know, him keeping his cows together. But most of the times when we heard him, we'd hear the kicking rocks, you know, down the side of a hill or something. But there was a couple of times, I think the first night we sat there, they came in silent. And I think the second night, there's one night I remember he bugled, and then, I'm not, they kind of came in real, like, a different area, like real late before they finally broke in. And then the last night is when they bugled and made some sounds enough that we were like, we know they're coming there. And we were right.
Right.
The shooter was right. He's got there too late. But, so it was kind of a mixed bag. I'd say only one time for sure they made enough sound that we knew where they were coming from.
Yeah. So thus my whole thing about if you can identify and be in the transition. So what's going to happen is those elk are not going to come into that open. And what was the moon like at that time?
I'm pretty sure, now you're asking me tough questions, but I'm pretty sure, that was like a new moon-ish, or close to a new moon, that whole hunt. I remember, like, we were kind of happy about that when you're planning it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I was just trying to figure, you know, a lot of times they don't break into that open until, and by the time you get in position, that half hour or 45 minutes, you know, between you making your decision and you and your shooter and everything, man, time starts to cut down pretty doggone quick, right? Yeah. So that's where one of my strategies would have been is to be able to at least identify where they were. And if I get in a good situation, wind wise, thermal wise, because there's a time in that midday that sun comes out and all those thermals are going up.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's easier because I don't have to worry about them if I'm on their level. I don't have to worry about them smelling me, and I can move in and just make sure I'm on the downwind side when I do that. And I only have to get off of that bull 200 yards, 150 yards. And now again, I go to doing a scenario type thing because he has bedded cows.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, one thing he will want is another one if he can. You know, he's already got a few there, so he's going to want another one. So it gives you a chance off to do that. Or if everything is jinky, you know, I've done this where, well, I couldn't trust the wind, so I'd go over a ridge just to ensure my wind didn't get to them. And I'd take my nap there. I'd do my thing. I'd listen and wait for the thermals to change. I know where they're at, so I know pretty much as they start to move which drainage are going to come down because I can be closer to them. And possibly then at that point, I don't know that it's an intercepting. I would still use calls.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, and here's the other thing is that a lot of people think that just because the elk are silent, that they're not responding, that, you know, calls aren't going to help, but they absolutely can, man. I mean, again,
they come in quiet. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll come in silent. So I don't think if I had a bull that had those cows and there's not much competition there, I think I would stay cow calf oriented. When I do that, I would really work with the calf calls are something that is not going to intimidate the bull. It's not going to intimidate the lead cow.
Yep.
I might use some of that. If I wasn't doing that, then my other option would be that I want to do some elk things over there of another herd and hope that I sound interesting to those other cows there so that those cows come to me. If the maternal doesn't work with the calf, then I'm going to go towards, well, I'm going to give them a better bull to breed with and there's going to be other cows in there. So that's another possibility. Or when he hears that and thinks that, you know, if he's not sounding off and there's no other elk around him sounding off, then yeah, he has cows with them, but none of them are in estrus, right?
Yep.
So if I make it sound like cows in estrus, then I might be able to pull him off and come and try to take one, try to breed one or anything like that.
Especially he was a pretty decent bull for that area too. Again, he was a 5x6. The only thing he had something broken off because his six side was strong.
Right.
He was a pretty, we had some of those morning pictures. I got him on a phone scope and he was a pretty good bull for that area for an over the or low point draw unit, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you said something earlier and I hear people say it all the time. They see a bull with one cow, two cows, and they say that that's a herd bull. You know, actually it's just an immature bull that has grabbed a cow, right? And they don't want to lose them in there. And actually that cow, if given a better suitor, will leave that son of a buck and come right to you. So if you sound like a more dominant displaying type bull, you can pull that cow to you and just bring the bull in tow. That's how I killed mine last year.
Mm-hmm.
I basically, knew where they were bedding in an area. I didn't worry about getting eyes on them. I didn't want that. I knew that they were down below, so I set up in a situation that they would have to actually come up to me to get, you know, to even have an idea where I'm at, and just put on a little breeding sequence, man. So, and what was interesting was it wasn't the bull that came in. The cow was hauling butt to me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So that's something to remember as far as that goes as well. But the cool thing, dude, is that you are going and having incredible experiences, and you're into elk every day, and that's half the battle right there.
Yeah. Yeah. We've, you know, talked to a lot of people that don't necessarily, take them a while before they even find their first elk. So we've done well there. We got to get that last, you know, 50 yards, 100 yards is kind of the obvious, for obvious reasons. That's what it is. Bow hunting starts with rifle, where rifle hunting ends, kind of thing. And,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, and that's where I'm really hopeful. You know, New Mexico, this unit we're going to, everything I've heard, you know, people talk about Colorado units. You never hear anyone say there's a bunch of elk there. Like you never hear about over the counter and low draw units. And everything I've heard about this New Mexico unit is that there's elk everywhere. So I'm looking forward to having
more experiences.
Part of New
Mexico, we talking
northern side.
Northern side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so if you're up north, and look, here's how I feel about New Mexico, and I felt the same way when I went to Colorado, because the first time, 2 years ago when we went into Colorado, I think we were in 80-81, and it's one of those are the type of units that everybody's like, well, bring your own rock, because, you know, there's so many people and blah, 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 like this, you know. We pull into the area where we were, and there's camp sites everywhere, and on opening morning, all, you know, it's like NASCAR, vroom, vroom,
yeah.
vroom, all the ATVs, UTVs going out. I literally, you know, called in a bull a mile and a half from the campsite. We never drove anywhere out that we had to get to, so people were driving by those elk, and so I feel like if there's elk, we can bring them in New Mexico. You can look at it, and if it is a low success rate unit, it only tells me one thing. It only tells me about the quality of the hunters, because I know that there's elk in most of those units. And if you're hunting that 15th to the 24th, you know, I really believe that those days, those 15th, 16th, 17th to the 20th, are probably your best days, with a little bit different strategy than what you would use once you start getting on the second half of that, when those bulls are, you know, the real herd bulls are cowed up.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is you're going to see bulls with satellite bulls. And so that opens up a different option for you.
Yep. Yep. And that's definitely looking forward to that, having that different experience. Cause we still have, you know, as many elk as we found, I still haven't seen more than one elk in a group, herd or group, however you want to call it.
Did you guys draw as a group?
No, I actually got drawn again for Colorado. I got drawn for Colorado. But we kind of agreed ahead of time that if anyone gets these New Mexico tags, that you can turn your Colorado tag in now within 4 days and get your money and your points back. So we kind of agreed to, we'd all go together. And so my friend, who's just like needs to play the lottery more often, seems to get everything. He drew. So, I like calling, you know.
Okay.
I save $700 on a tag. I get to use my trekking poles, the entire trip. And so, I'll go down there. We're going to call. We'll have maybe a second. Some of us might shoot off and go scout while just two of us are hunting.
Right.
And, but yeah, so we all apply it separately just to boost our odds a little bit. I'll be in Colorado next year, if nothing else, going back to the same unit.
Yeah, awesome, man. That's fantastic. There's one thing that I had in my head that kind of dodged back. I was like going through your story as you were storytelling. When that bull came down into the park and your buddy, you guys were kind of set up and you were back behind him. Could
mm-hmm.
you see that bull when you were talking to him?
So are you talking about like the first night where they kind of came in and we didn't interact with them? Or are you talking about that last night?
The last night when your buddy started running at him.
Yeah. So could I see him? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I did see him. And that's when I backed off to get below the cover, so he couldn't see where I was calling from. And then when that wasn't get them to budge. I went back up, ranged them, and I was like, you got to go, we're out of time. And then I backed up again and went around.
So when you were calling to him when he came into the park, what kind of call were you using?
So he initiated the bull initiated the sounds by bugling and raking. And then, that's when I started using, I might have done some regathering muse. I can't remember for sure, but I was definitely doing contact buzzes.
Okay.
Towards the end. I can't remember if I started with regathering muse or not.
Towards the bull or behind you, away from him? Were you calling?
Towards him. Again, we were 200 yards away, and I was below a little berm behind some trees. Yeah.
Right. And no decoy, because that's another thing that I think.
Yeah, so no decoy. We are bringing a decoy to New Mexico because this particular unit, I understand, is a little more open. And so we will definitely be – if we had a decoy there, it would have been a difference. We would have been done a lot of things a little differently. So we're bringing one with us this year.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Yeah. In that situation, man, had you as the caller had a decoy back there, that might have been money right there. Cause remember,
I thought about it. Yeah.
they want to confirm visually first, right?
Yeah.
So, that could have been huge for you. And I want other people to hear is that, you're 200 yards away. So I think with the cow calls and the buzz, you were fine just doing it through your mouth, Adam. And the only thing is, again, he sees that and, he's looking that way and he's not seeing anything and he doesn't want to separate himself there. So yeah, I try to tell people, and this is why I bring it up, is if you're seeing a bull and you're calling to him, you've set yourself up for a hung bull.
Yep.
Because
definitely. Yeah. I know you guys do too, but Chris Rowe's bedroom door principle or whatever. And so I try to be really cognizant of that. And that was, that situation we just kind of had, made do with what we had, because there was no way we could have made up the ground to get within bow range going through the tree line there. And so with the time we had, the decision in my mind was like, well, if we can give him to budge, I'm backing off, but if not, we're going at him and I'm going to try to distract him.
Right.
Was just kind of a making lemonade out of lemon situation there.
And I will tell you too, because you were talking about New Mexico being more open. What I would, and there's always big parks, areas, but my goal is always to get them as thick as possible. Mm-hmm. So, I want it thick so that they're having to look for me so that when I do see them, it's going to be that close, effective 20 yard, 15 yard shot. Now, a lot of people are like, well, if I get in the thick cover and they're talking, I don't get to see them. Well, okay. So you could be in cover. I mean, not in cover and see them, but you're still not going to kill them because they're expecting to see another elk, right? I would much take that 80 yard separation in open area and put it in a thick area so that now that bull doesn't see me and that bull's going to have to keep coming. And I do have an opportunity to kill that bull, right?
Yeah. So. It's definitely one of those things. It's like setting up behind cover, like your brain's wrong. Like you got to consciously think about that kind of thing. I know that's, I think we probably have all done that at one point of our lives, bow hunting, where you got behind cover and like, what the hell, the animal gets there and you're like, I'm screwed,
Yeah.
It's the same thing concept with, you want to see it, but that's actually not good for you.
Yeah. Sam.
Especially elk, they make noise. You'll hear them coming in.
Absolutely. And remember, guys, everybody listening, just because they're not calling doesn't mean they're not responding. So, you got to keep that in mind, that elk do things in elk time. They can be coming to you, and a lot of people will just move out of an area. But if I'm someplace where I'm smelling them, or I know that they're there, that I've seen something, and I start doing a calling scenario, you've got to give it that chance for it to happen, because they move in their time and not ours. So, Sam.
You guys talked about another podcast where, if you start calling in those situations, like you're sitting there 30, 45 minutes, and that's hard to do.
It is, absolutely.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's very hard. I would say that, man, in the evening, it's, and I actually start doing that kind of stuff in that midday to 3-4 o'clock, because like you said, in the, it gets to a certain point where they're getting to their, going to their destination, but there's a time in their frame when they're kind of meandering before they head to that destination. Mm-hmm. they'll get up and stretch. You can get to those, get close to bedding areas. You know, you can try different things from outside a bedding area. So, I think you actually got a pretty good tab on what's going on. And did any of this help you out in any way?
Yeah, no, I think for sure. And I'll have to go back and watch the recording too. I'm a note taker. Usually I'm working out when I'm listening to you guys, and I'll, you know, hiking or rucking, and I got my iNotes out there. I'm writing stuff down. But yeah, there was definitely some tidbits earlier. Even just on the Colorado situation from a couple of years ago, we talked about that. I need to go back and listen to this again and write down what you said. So definitely was helpful.
Well, y'all, this is Sam Wright. This has been our Elk Bro Scenario revamp session, the first one that we've done. Any of you guys out there that you have a scenario that you got into and you just didn't know how to work it, or it was a situation that, you know, you heard somebody else talk about, or, you know, anything that you have questions on that are scenario related, send us an email and you might get a phone call from me, and we'll set up one of these scenario revamp sessions and have fun with it. You learn, everybody else learns. It's a win-win. Sam, thanks for doing this, man. You're the first one.
Yeah, appreciate it. And when I screw up something in New Mexico, I'll give you a call.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you. See ya.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.